It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 352. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You could email me questions and suggestions for future show topics, and I have a stack of email tonight that I'm going to get to. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. Got two great voicemails. Phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Mike Tech Show, and also on Facebook. Send me a friend request. Go to facebook.com/Mike Tech Show. I have a great jam-packed show tonight. Some tips and tricks, a couple little consulting stories. I have a problem that I had with my Verizon router this week. I have an excellent voicemail and a great follow-up to some questions from last week where I think I misinterpreted the question and I got called on it from some listeners, and it was just, I didn't think of it. And we're going to get into that on the static IP address. What else? We got so much more. I have no music for tonight. Had no time to really pick any independent music. So before we start everything, we want to welcome back GoToMeeting. Online meetings are a great tool for businesses to work smarter. That's why I recommend GoToMeeting by Citrix, the easiest, most reliable online meeting service available. GoToMeeting, I'm excited that they are back as a sponsor. They were a sponsor with me for 5 years of the Mike Tech Show, and I use this product on a regular basis. I save time by holding a meeting online, and I don't have to get in my car. I don't have to travel. I don't have the tolls, the gas mileage. You know the price of gas. It's so much easier to demonstrate something and collaborate using an online tool. Take advantage of GoToMeeting's offer for free 30 days. That's a month worth of unlimited online meetings for free. And you need to visit the GoToMeeting and click the Try It button. When you go to GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It button and enter the promo code PODCAST. So to get your 30 days, go to GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It button, enter the promo code PODCAST, and we thank GoToMeeting for being a sponsor of the Mike Tech Show. First thing on the agenda here, Sunday night, my Verizon router decides to display the yellow light on the word internet, which means that I'm not getting a good internet connection. So everybody in the house is down, no internet. I reboot the router. I reboot. No joy. So now I have to call Verizon tech support. I call them, and what operating system are you using? And I have to go through this. And as much as I try to accelerate the process, it doesn't work. They have a script. They have to follow it. And I got to dutifully follow along. When they ask me what operating system, I say, which of the 15 computers would you like me to tell you the operating system for? I realize this, and I dial it back. I go through the process. Now, I have my Windows 7 HP laptop hooked directly into the router, so we can take everything out of the picture of anything that could be connected to it. They determine that there is a problem with the router, and that it's got to be replaced. So what do? I tell them I have another Verizon router that I've had from a couple years ago from where I used to have Fios, and I was allowed to keep the router when we moved because they let you keep it. And I kept that thing on a shelf. One of the things that I have done is I bring it out and they tell me it's not going to work. Could you imagine them telling me that it's not going to work? I get it to work. I mean, they can't even see the router. I don't know what the person at the other end is doing, but all I know is I'm up, I'm running. Now, I don't like the wireless of the model router, of the older router. We have much better wireless and Wi-Fi connectivity with the current version. We're up and running. Everything's happy, but I still get a ticket case number, and I say, send me a new router that I can put in place, and then I'll put this back on the shelf. So they do that. Now, Tuesday, we get the router. Tuesday wasn't a very good day for me, but Tuesday night didn't look like it was going to be any better because I put the new router in place, a yellow light. I'm like, oh my, I can't believe this. How can it? I mean, it's very simple. You know, you plug it in. How do I get another yellow light going to the internet? I call, and this is the tip for everybody with Verizon. I call tech support. This time I get a guy who knows what he's doing. And he says, Mike, I know exactly what the problem is with the yellow light. And let me tell you, that's very shocking to hear that at the other end. He says, I'm going to fix this. It is because your IP address for your house, it's tied up and it's still trying now to connect to the old router that you just shut off. He says, I need to release the IP address so you can get a DHCP IP address from us. This is a condition that happens a lot, and they release it. I get an IP and I'm up and running better than ever. I asked, I said, do you think that was the problem on Sunday night? He says, absolutely. I said, so I'm sending you back a router that was probably is good. He says, yes. He says, just send it back. Keep the new one connected. I said, okay. And then I'll put my old router, tried and true, saved me. And I put that back on the shelf. Valuable lessons here. Have backup equipment, especially if it's your lifeline for your business. For me, it's all about my internet connection. I cannot live without my internet connection. I keep spare equipment for everything. If my system crashes, I'm moving on to another computer. Keyboard, mouse, monitors. I keep backups for everything. I keep a backup router because it's too important. So you're saying, Mike, I don't have that option. I bet you can go on eBay and get the same router from someone who was able to keep it as an extra router from Verizon. Buy it, test it, then put it on the shelf. You have to have these things. Right now, the only thing that can take me offline, which has happened, because I live on a big street, a big truck coming by and taking down the line that goes across that gets me my connection, that happened. A big truck coming by taking my Pico power line so I don't have electricity, that has happened. A tree falling down, taking out the lines. The only thing that I need is a generator and maybe a backup internet connection. And let me tell you, I am giving that serious consideration of possibly having Comcast internet as a backup and having that line come from a different direction on the street. And then if I have a generator, now I'm in business. Two internet connections, a generator, and I'm set. So I don't know if I'm going to go to that extreme, but have contingencies for your small business or big business. Just take this and magnify it and make sure whatever's a critical service to you or a critical item, take a look at it and say, what would happen if it broke or if I don't have it? Make sure that you absolutely look at everything that's a necessity for you and have a backup. Just like we back up our data, the same thing. Make sure you have backups for all your hardware. That is critical to you. I'll do one consulting story. I got a panic phone call from a new retainer client that he could not remote desktop back into his desktop in the office from his home system. The previous IT person set that all up for him, and it has been working, and I've been on the account now for a couple weeks and have changed nothing. Everything's been fine, but it stopped working. For the life of me, I could not figure out what was going on. This was literally Wednesday night, and it was driving me crazy, and I couldn't figure out what was happening because his system was connecting to the domain. But I started having some issues that looked like it was DNS related with an Active Directory. So let's keep that aside for a second. So to immediately solve his problem of remote access, I put LogMeIn on his system, showed him how to access it. So we got past the immediate crisis. We still have a problem. Yesterday afternoon, I was home and I was getting ready to go to actually another new client from last night. He calls me and he already has someone on the phone from the corporate office of the main application that he uses for his business. It would no longer connect to the server. So now I have an IT guy representing the software company and me, and then my client in the middle on his desktop. And so we start going over all the possibilities of what could be going on here, because his desktop is no longer finding the server. We trace route and we see it keeps going to the wrong IP address. And we're like scratching our heads. How could it be going to the wrong IP address? Everything's set perfectly. It's been working. And then it dawned on me. I said, check the hosts file. So I wasn't remoted into the desktop, but the other IT guy was from the software company. He's already remoted in. He checks the host file. And wouldn't you know it, we see the domain controller listed with its name and the wrong IP address. Instead of 192.168.10.5, it was .1.5. And we see a couple other entries that are wrong. Now, how did this happen? Now I get the entire story from my client. It seems when they changed routers a while back, they decided to change their IP address. I don't know why, but they did. And the tech that I replaced that left the account kind of left my client in a lurch. And then I was brought in. That's how I got the business, where the IT person just vanished, disappeared. I'm starting to see some things that were set. If you have to create a hosts file because of the networking, solve your networking problem. There's no need for you to do a hosts file. And here's how you got into trouble. And there's static IP addresses everywhere. I have to do some cleanup here. So this client and the previous IT support, what they've done, because the IP address changed, they didn't account for changing the host file. They changed the desktop, they changed the printer, they changed all the pieces. But when you start messing with static IP addresses, you get into trouble because you have the IP address now that you forget to change in a host file that for some ungodly reason, they put it in there. Wins was still active, and I seen that Wins even had the wrong IP address. These are things that end up driving people nuts as to why things aren't working. And I was really glad I was able to resolve this quickly. But it has now heightened my senses for when I go back in there for the things I'm going to be looking for. And I need to spend some time doing an assessment of all the desktops. I've done an assessment of the server and everything was good there. Actually, there's two servers. And with, by the way, no KVM switch, so you can't get to the other server. So there's little things I'm cleaning up along the way here. Once I get this straightened out, then they should be problem-free going forward, which is what I want. Just an occasional problem here or there. And I can have them as a retainer client for a couple hours a month, keep an eye on things, and be available for questions. Enough of the consulting stories. I have a tip, and this tip comes from a brand new client. If you're listening, thank you for this tip. They are a new Mac user, and they are a diehard iPad user. They're waiting on their iPad 2, and I already have mine. And here's the tip. If you are a Mac user and you want to take your photo editing to the next level and you want to go from iPhoto to Aputure, buy Aputure from the online Mac app store, like you would buy an app from your iPhone. You know, the app store is now available when you update iTunes on your full-blown iMac or MacBook Pro. You have an app store, and you could download big apps. Aputure, she purchased for $79. If you were to go online and go buy that anywhere, it's $189. The tip is you can possibly save money by going to the app store first. So if you're a Mac user or Mac owner and you're looking at purchasing an app, before you pull the trigger and buy it, go check the app store and see if it's there, and it may be cheaper. So that's the tip. Give a listen to this voicemail, which is a response to last week's question. And then I have a couple emails that also talk about this. And then we'll move on to some other topics. But give a listen.
Hi, Mike. This is Brad Warch out of California again. I have a suggestion on, I think it was show 351, where you were talking about the DHCP in the router, particularly the Linksys or D-Link. Yeah, the Linksys usually starts at 192.168.1.100. And what I do is anything that I don't statically IP address, like my mock servers and printers, I count up like gaming consoles and all that kind of stuff, and I limit the number of DHCP addresses put out. I may have like one or two extra. They don't have a lot of security, and hopefully that will keep somebody from scanning my system. You know, I do have WPA encryption, but at least it will limit the number of DHCP addresses that can be handed out. So I know with WPA it's pretty safe, but you never know. So I just limit, you're allowed to limit the number of DHCP addresses put out. So I limit it to the number that I actually have in the house. So no extra ones can be handed out. Anyways, thanks, great show. I'll talk to you later. Thanks, bye.
That's a good idea. But remember, if someone wants to get in desperately and they know your IP scheme, they can add a static IP address. Also, WPA, and especially WPA2, is a very good, secure encryption for your Wi-Fi. WPA2 should be your standard. And that was another thing I didn't like about my old Verizon router. It was WPA, and then the new one can do WPA2. It is very good. I'm paranoid, but I'm not that paranoid where I'm going to limit the IP scope. But again, it's a great idea. And Brad, thank you very much for that. Now, with that, the question I received was someone who wants to go remote desktop for one of their users and the router rebooted and they could no longer get to the desktop because they needed to assign a static IP address. I might have misinterpreted that entire email. I talked about how to assign a static IP address internally. What about the router? The IP address of the router might have changed on the reboot. I didn't even consider that. This is Mark. Hi, Mike. I was just listening to show 351, where you had a voicemail about not being able to remote into a Linksys router after it had been power cycled. You described how to set a static internal IP address and do your port forwarding. The way I understood the voicemail, I thought his problem was that he was getting a new public IP address whenever the router was rebooted. If that is the case, it sounds like the small business he set up is getting a random IP address from their ISP and may need to be using something like Dyn DNS to update the public IP address whenever it changes. I wasn't sure which problem the caller was having, so I thought I would throw that out there in case someone else was having that problem. I used to have to do this at my house so I could remote into my servers from client locations. I have since set up a Windows Home server that takes care of this for me, but Dyn DNS works well if you don't have a static IP address from your ISP. Thank you. This is Mark Williams. Mark, thank you. I'm going to add just another little tidbit to this. Dyn DNS, when you get a domain name, so I can have like Mike's Home as my domain name, and I could have mikeshome.dynedns.org. Now, you can download a little client that just runs on a machine that's going to be running all the time. And anytime the IP address changes, your public IP address from your ISP, when that changes, this client will go to DynDNS and say, hey, Mike's Home's IP address changed. It's now this new IP address. So all I have to remember from outside the house is go to mikeshome.dynedns.org. Great way to alleviate the problem of a dynamic IP address, an IP address that changes, but yet you want a static domain name to get to it. And that could have been the problem. So we have another follow-up email for this. This is from Tim. For the emailer who was having issues with remote desktop and the static IP addresses, if you use remote desktop from outside your local network, you have to ensure you know your router's IP address, which can also change if your router or modem is rebooted. I use the free dynamic DNS host from Dyn DNS. A host is assigned to you, and i.e. nameisageek.com, and is associated to your router's IP address. You only need to remember the host name and not the IP address, which will change. Dyn DNS updater client then can be used on the host machine that will update the associated router IP address if it would change. My two cents, Tim. Tim, thank you very much. He actually named the program, which is Dyn DNS updater. If you are in this situation, everything that I talked about last week on assigning the static IP address internally, along with what we talked about now for the external IP address, you are now set for being able to remote in or set up anything that you want and make sure that you can withstand a router rebooting and the IP address changing. Thank you, everybody, for your comments. On the lighter side, but yet very serious, Carrie Holzman did a great video of how fast and how easy it is to get infected with malware, where he uses a virtual PC setup to demonstrate. And it is really very, very well done. And the link will be in the show notes to the YouTube video on how to avoid malware infections. And I know what he demonstrates is exactly what many of our clients do in accepting or hitting OK or not knowing how to answer a bad prompt that's coming up, where they go down an ugly path and get infected. This is a very good video. Take a look at that. Also, Carrie has a tremendous amount of videos to help you build your own PC, and they're just great. So check them out. Thank you, Carrie. This link is from Paul LaForge, 129 in the chat, and it's glad to see him back. And he says, sorry I haven't been around to join the crowd on Thursday nights, but I've been really busy. Last month, I finally bought a domain that is so easy to remember that no one will have a hard time getting to it. It's www.paulstechtalk.com. And that's TECH talk.com. Anyway, I have started to blog on the new domain and thought it would be a good topic for you to cover. He has a link that I'm going to put in the show notes. Is the pen is mightier than the megabyte. Great article on using your USB sticks. And how many pen drives do you have ready for those times when there is an emergency computer problem? I'd love it if you'd share my link and also talked about your techniques and having a USB flash drive. Thank you, Paul, for that. Check out his website and the article that I'm going to link. Now, with USB sticks, I have multiple USB sticks. I even make sure I back up my USB stick because I put great utilities. Now, something I have not been doing, and I've covered this in many past shows a long time ago, is making bootable operating systems off the USB stick. I haven't been doing that lately, but I'll tell you what I keep on there. I keep the technician's version of SIW that I purchased for giving me a report on every computer that I ever come in contact with. That's right. Every computer, I run SIW and I generate that big HTML report, and that goes into my file that I have on every computer that I maintain. I put log me in on every system for anybody that is going to be a retainer client or a regular client of mine, so I can quickly log in and take over. So there are log me in files that you can put on that USB stick. I also have all the main utilities that we talk about, and I now have fell in love with the temporary file cleaner, that TFC file that I talked about a few weeks ago. If you have not used it and you have XP, I'm kind of afraid to use it in Windows 7, but on XP, it is incredible. That's a must-have. I also have all of my favorite portable apps that I've talked about. I have my portable Firefox, and I keep also the updated Super Anti-Spyware, Malware Bytes, the latest free Avira. I love Avira for antivirus. I don't like any of the others. And we could spend hours and hours debating all the different antiviruses. I like Avira, and it's my opinion. It's given me the less trouble. Remember, I keep using a program until it disappoints me, until an update disappoints me and gives me a reason to abandon them. Avira has not done that. Okay? That's where I go on a utility until they come out with that update and they disappoint me, and then it's over, and then the love affair is over and it's done, and I get rid of them and I move on to another program. Make sure all the utilities, everybody has different utilities that they like, that they feel comfortable with. Make sure you organize them and put them in your USB stick in a way that's easy for you to get to. If you need help with portable utilities, you got portableapps.com. The go-to main site for anything portable apps. The utilities that I love for examining performance and auto runs, which is the sysinternals, Process Explorer for anything that's running on the system. These are all tremendous utilities, and I keep them updated, and I keep multiple USB sticks with them, so in case one fails, I got another one and I could put it in. I like 8 gig USB sticks from PNY. I got a few of them from really a long time ago, and they're perfect. Thank you, Paul, for the email. Good luck with your new blog and site. Here's another voicemail.
Hi, Mike. This is Denny down in Baltimore. I got a question on some comments you made on the Computer America show about the Dell laptops between the business class and the consumer class. On the business class, I guess you mentioned there's no trialware installed on the business class laptops as opposed to the consumer ones, which are loaded with plenty of trialware. And I was wondering, because I want to get a laptop and just like strip everything out and install a TechNet's version of Windows 7 on top of it. Now, if the business class Dell laptop is pretty much stripped out, I should go that route. I just wanted to get your opinion on that, to either go with the business class Dell laptop that's stripped out with no trialware, or just a consumer grade and just load up a TechNet's version of Windows 7. Thanks.
I started thinking about this when I heard your voicemail, when I played it earlier, to, you know, when I was getting ready for the show. And it dawned on me, if you are redoing the system, you don't care. If you're going to be using your Windows 7 from TechNet, buy the system, and then what I would do is boot it up once and get the drivers off the system. Dell always puts their drivers in a drivers directory off of the root of C. I would copy that and then just blow the thing away with your TechNet's DVD, and then look, you got the drivers. That's it. And you won't put any of the bloatware, trialware, and you don't have to clean it all. You just got to get through that boot process. Now, Dell has their Inspiron and their Latitude, and the Latitude are going to cost more. That's the business version, the corporate version of the Dell laptop. And yes, it doesn't have the trialware. I find those machines built a little better. They just seem a little more sturdier, just a little better construction than the consumer one. But the consumer one can save you a lot of money, depending on the right deal. Now it's just a matter of the physical hardware, where you can get the best bang for your buck, the best deal. But do not worry about what's included from a software point of view, because you're blowing it away. So don't worry about that. This is an update from Lonnie. This is an update to a question, and I don't even know if Lonnie realizes this. You wrote me an email for an HP printer problem that I covered on a Friday night Computer America show that Carrie and I answered. Lonnie, I will send you the link to the archive of that so you can hear your question. And he updated that. Keep going back and forth here, where when I'm on Computer America, I will bring some questions that I haven't gotten to on the Mike Tech show. And this was one of them, because we have beat printers up and printer problems so bad here and so much on the Mike Tech show that I decided, well, we'll take them into the Computer America world. Anyway, he says, "Hello, Mike. I've solved my problem. After trying the recommended drivers, I tried the Windows PostScript driver that was intended for high-end graphics and special PDFs, and it worked fine. Our company was printing standard Excel, Word, and ordinary PDFs. I'm not sure why this would take the PostScript driver. And yeah, can you explain this?" Well, thanks, Lonnie. Before you even sent me this email, that was actually one of my suggestions that you're going to hear on Computer America, which it was, if you're having trouble printing to a printer and the printer can support PostScript, try the PostScript driver as opposed to the PCL driver. You may get better results. Sometimes it just fixes the problem. I don't know why, the details behind it, but you know what? If it works, you just do it. I've seen so many printer driver problems, including one I had to fix tonight before the show. A couple hours before I went live, I was at a client's site, and they have a lot of XP systems, and one of the persons just got a new computer, and it's Windows 7, and they're financial advisors, and the Windows 7 machine was sharing a color printer, a color laser that was attached locally to the machine. Now the couple people from XP couldn't print to it. And they tried everything. They spent hours and hours, and they called HP, and they called. I came in and I said, well, it's Windows 7 and it's XP. So you know what we got to do? I look at the name of the Windows 7 machine. I write the name down. I look at the printer name. And what is it being shared at? What name is that? Then I go to the XP machine, and the first thing I do is I create a new local port. And what name do I give it? / / the name of the computer, / the name of the printer share. That's it. We loaded the driver with it, and it worked perfectly. And their mouths just dropped, and they said, we've been working on this for days. You come in here and in 5 minutes just fix this. And I said, well, this is what I do for a living. I have seen so many printer problems right now, and especially, you know, XP trying to communicate with Windows 7. You know my story when I talked about this a while ago. It just makes it work. And once you see it, you're not going to forget what the answer is. And I know new listeners listening to what I just said is like, that's it. That's what's going to make my XP system talk to be able to share the printer from Windows 7. That's right. You have to do that. This is it. This is things that I've learned. It certainly makes it. It was great. Today was a good problem solving day with that client, because They had lots of little things like that, and I just, you know, bring them on, and I kept banging out the solutions, and it made me feel real good. So a great way to start to close out the week on a high note. This is from Brian. He says, I was listening to show 351 and unfortunately can relate way too much with your difficulty of tracking hours. I'm a one-man show with about 10 bread-and-butter clients for whom I provide IT support, web design, and maintenance, etc. Brian sounds just like me. I also do project management, working with other consultants to provide technology solutions for federal, state, and local government entities. As you can imagine, I'm hopping from one task to another, shifting from email to phone to Skype to GoToMeeting, as well as spending time at client sites, on the road, in my office, etc. What is the only constant with all of these situations? My iPhone is always by my side. I've been using the Time Logger iPhone app for the past 2 or 3 years. It's the perfect tool for consultants like us who need to track time for different clients and different jobs per client. This app allows you to define lists of clients, categories, and job lists. It has a start and stop time and a date for each entry, and notes so that you can enter the tasks you performed at each job. There's also a built-in audio note recording function. Guess what I'm purchasing, the minute the show's over? All of your entries can be exported and emailed as a CSV file right from the app. I bill monthly, so I record my transactions all month and generate the CSV file when it's time for billing. I open my CSV in Excel, sort by client, then by start date, and I have the total hours worked for each and all the tasks performed. Then I copy and paste everything into QuickBooks invoice and email the invoice to my clients as a PDF. Oh my. Does this sound like the perfect workflow app that we were talking about last week? I so need this. The Time Logger app is a pay app, and I'm a free app guy, but this has definitely paid for itself many times over. Here's a link to their site, and it is www.appideas.com/node/4. Thanks again for the show, Mike. You really provide an invaluable resource, and we all appreciate your hard work. P.S., I've got all my family members using your Amazon.com link, yay, for their purchases. I would implore my peers to do the same. It's the least we can do to say thanks for the time and effort you put into this. Thanks again, Brian. Brian, thank you so much for that recommendation. I really appreciate it. And for anybody who has an iPhone like myself, this sounds like a killer app for what I'm going through. He heard my plight in describing the manual process of what I do for the workflow for my business. And this will certainly automate things and make it easier and stop those hours crawling through the cracks that I sometimes don't bill for. Thank you. And also, not just this, but mentioning of my Amazon link, I want to thank everybody for your continued support of my Amazon link. And something interesting, if you notice this week, Amazon released a new Kindle that's ad-based, but it's only $25 cheaper than the $139. It's $114. Is it worth $25 to have ads on your Kindle? I don't know. I don't think it's a big enough savings. I think they should have made it half price or less than half price. I don't think it's worth the $25 for the ads. I could be wrong. I don't know if that's going to succeed. To me, if I'm looking at that, the $25, I'm probably going to pay it just to stop the ad. But what it does remind us all is please continue to help support the show. Yes, you heard me with a sponsor, but I tell you, that's not a lot of money. Amazon and you helping me with the Amazon is a big, big support for the Mike Tech Show. And please continue to click on that link and helping me out and sharing that link with everybody. I love it. Just you are all coming through for me, and I so appreciate that. And I hope I'm responding in kind by giving you quality tips and tricks and stories and information that you learn and can use that can help you become more productive, which is what this show is all about. That's it. Thank you and good night. And I will talk to you next week. Same time, same channel. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.